You're listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
Welcome to the world of the orphans. I know you've all been freshly awakened, but I have my own things to deal with, as we are about to crack a lovely landing.
The Orphans, an original audio drama experience. Episode 1, available May 23rd, exclusively at oneofus.net.
And it's time once again to play another round of Who's the Least Sober Person in the Room?
Uncle.
Ryan, yeah. Would that be you?
We have an uncle?
Well, I'm Uncle Ryan.
He is an uncle.
Oh, that's true.
He is Uncle Ryan.
You are Uncle Ryan.
I spent the afternoon with a friend of mine who owns a bar, and I have a side business where I do credit card processing, yada yada yada. Anyway,
I thought he was going to get into like an Uncle Ryan kind, you know, the drunk uncle story. And oh, let me tell you about the shape of the bar.
Yeah, it wasn't anything like that.
I hope so.
Anyhow, schedules did not meet up in the correct way, and so I spent the entire afternoon drinking at my friend's bar, and now I'm here
drinking.
Well,
with the rest of us.
Well, yeah.
Like, no, I don't say that in any. I'm not admonishing you for it.
You're not being pejorative?
I'm not being pejorative. I'm merely recognizing the fact that you brought a large bottle of wine in, ostensibly to consume by yourself.
Well, I'm not going to consume all of it by myself.
Well, I would be impressed if you did.
It'd be a bold move.
Yeah. Well, in any case, I'm in a good space. I'm not.
It's not like the time. What did you do that one episode where you like stayed up all night the night before and then like drank all day and then.
I think that was the Memorial Day episode when
came
we
over
the
to Kevin's house.
Yeah.
I think it was Labor Day.
It's just you just get like halfway through the podcast, you hear this.
Yeah.
Apparently that was Ryan.
Well, I'm not shithoused. I have a very healthy buzz on.
You seem smooth.
He did stop his car on top of my gravel pile in the garage.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Mark has a huge pile of gravel outside. All right, we'll get to all that in a little while. But
let's play some music.
Yeah, I'm Shane.
Ryan.
Kevin.
And Mark.
Somebody likes it.
So, some sad news from the world of entertainment.
Wait, should we?
Shocking sad news that an old person died.
Yes. And now it's time for sad news. It's somebody likes it.
It's this time part of the pod. You know, you really should get one of those, like, organ, like, background, like, sad organ, like church
old,
organ things.
Old soap opera music?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the fact that you're bringing this up, and how I just feel like you're just doing it to bait me.
Kind of. Yeah. I'm going to do that and then play a long sax solo.
A 90-year-old woman died.
Yes. Yes. Doris Roberts, who you may know as the annoying mom in Everybody Loves Raymond, died at 90. And I just want to say, when will the senseless killing stop? Like, that's my concern.
That is a worthy thing. You should get, like, Al Sharpton to have, like, a press conference.
Yeah, yeah.
Can we...
Anyway, sorry. That was my quick sidebar.
It's okay. I don't know if I've talked about this before, but there's, like, Co-op Radio, which is, like, a co-op-owned radio station in Austin, and there's a...
It's public radio.
Yeah, but I mean, it's only community. They don't have any outside, like, programming.
And for people who don't know, is it just people just dropping by all the time? You know, just making a community, getting on the air?
Yeah.
No, they have... People actually have shows.
Oh, okay.
Like, there's actual DJs.
Oh, yeah, that show. Okay, that station.
Sometimes, yeah, that's the shows are interrupted by people... that are tending to their garden in the background.
That's probably there's organic.
See, I always thought it was like owned by C. Everett Koop. That's not true.
That's the
no, the former Surgeon General in the Reagan administration,
who's dead now. Yeah,
we're just going to talk about dead old people again. Well, they have this show on Saturdays called Graveside Service, which is actually pretty cool. They each week they pick like three or four people and then play like three or four songs by, you know, each of their canon. But they all, they really mix it up and they put in like interesting.
And they all have to be dead?
Yeah, that's what's called Great Side Service.
I mean, I didn't know if that was just where they wanted to play or like, but they're
oh, because that's the place
they just go
want,
like park themselves in a graveyard.
Look, unless you're like a 15-year-old goth, nobody wants to go like and play music
this
in a
week,
graveyard.
Broadcasting from the Randolph Cemetery.
It is kind of creepy out here, even at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Hey, what was the we were talking about this last week, and we neglected to get it on the air, but it's worthy of mentioning. And that is that Led Zeppelin is going to a jury trial,
being sued for the I don't know how many different times they've been sued, but they're being sued again
for ripping off the intro to Stairway to Heaven. And the judge, it went to a by this band, there was a band called Spirit, and
to make sure that we're super clear on this, the allegation is that the intro to Stairway to Heaven is a ripoff in and of itself.
It is. I've heard it.
Yeah.
Like.
I've heard them both too.
Yeah. I mean, there's.
And they toured together.
That's a lot of people are alleging that. You know, I think that there's a good possibility that, and the judge was right. The judge apparently is the most musically engaged judge in the history of the world. Like, he understands how a chromatic chords work.
Well, the verbiage of how they explain. What's going on, why it is a ripoff, is so intricate.
But the fact that the judge understood that and put that in his – basically, they put it before him, and he was like, I feel like – he essentially was insinuating, I feel like it is ripped off. But having said that, there's a lot of commonality in these types of chord progressions. Therefore, let's present it to a jury. So it's going to a jury trial now. So
so basically, he said, I kind of already think that you guys are guilty, but I'm going to do you a solid and let somebody else.
I get the feeling that's kind of what's going on.
Yeah.
So,
interesting.
I don't really think, honestly, at this point in their careers, anybody left alive that was ever in that band is hurting in any way for money.
Monetarily? Oh, sure. No.
You're talking about Zeppelin, not Spirit.
Yeah, well, the dude that wrote this song,
he drowned saving his kid.
Yeah.
From a riptide or something in Hawaii.
Yeah, so I think
so it's his estate.
It's his estate that's doing this, but you know.
Was it Randy California is like what his stage name was?
I think you're right. I think at this point, if you're Led Zeppelin, you've got, well, number one, you know, like what? Like, how old is Jimmy Page now? In his 70s? So,
yeah, something like that.
Didn't they have their own 747 or something with Led Zeppelin painted on the side? Retarded.
They did, but I think it's less monetary than it is a point of pride. Like, no, I fucking wrote that song, Estate of Spirit, Randy California, or whatever his name was. I mean, that's got to be what it is, because at this point, you know, just they would have settled it under, you know, paid him some money, but they want.
Well, and they've settled with a couple of old blues musicians.
That's true. They have. They did, but they directly, they straight up just copped. They just copped.
No,
to
they
that.
Ripped off some shit.
But I mean, they did it well.
Absolutely. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying, yes.
I don't think I've ever. Maybe I've told this story on this podcast. We, you know, it all blends together. But Mark's tell me about it. Anyway, I had a friend who I went to high school with, who when he went to college came here to UT and in Austin, and had a roommate who played guitar. And this friend of mine did not play guitar, but this buddy taught him the first the several intro notes to Stairway to Heaven, and they would have girls over their dorm room, and my friend John would pick up the guitar like he was just noodling around, and he would play literally the only part of that song that he could play, and then he would just act like he was bored with it, and everybody'd heard it 1,000 times, and those girls never knew. Y'all know that song.
He would just be hoping by the time he got to the point where he didn't know any of the song, at that point, the girl would already have,
That's the panty,
flowers
that's the
and hearts coming out of her eyes. Yeah, that's the
I'm
panty
sure
dropper.
That's exactly
the four
what,
seconds
yeah.
that would get into that
yeah.
point.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. Enough Led Zeppelin. There, surprisingly, for an album that there ain't shit about on the internet, I think we have quite a bit to say. But about the album.
Well, it's not even really an album.
But let me just say this: of all this shit that has been picked, this one is truly maybe the most bizarre thing
totally bizarre.
that has been chosen yet. And Ryan did it at like 5 o'clock in the morning.
It's true.
Can we talk about cornmeal?
No.
We will talk about cornmeal. But I picked one of the three albums that's called I Saw the Light by Hank Williams.
And it's
Turns out dude just didn't really release albums. He just put out a bunch of like singles and radio programs.
It wasn't until he died that I think 53 was when Sinatra put out the first LP,
Well, there were two records that he actually put out, and I don't remember what they are off the top of my head, but they weren't on Spotify. And so I was like, well, let's just do like a 10-song compilation thing. And it just comes packaged with a bunch of cornmeal.
Yeah. They'll play the song, and then they'll get to the end of the song, and then he and the guys in the band will just talk about cornmeal.
Hey, you know what? I don't know much about it. One thing I like about living in the South, I don't know much about cooking no cornbread, but I sure know I like eating it. And if you're going
like
to eat it,
puppies.
you're going to mother's eat. Best cornmeal to make your cornbread.
Yeah, so, the guys in the back going,
so Mark actually knows a little bit more about this than the rest of us.
Yeah, so chime in, Mark.
I did a little bit of digging on this because I was really intrigued by the commercial aspect of this thing.
Wait, just real quick before you continue, it was sort of like when the Who sell out, except without the jokes were way funnier, but they were unintentional.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Well, it's all kinds of sexist all the way through it.
But so this was 1950, 1951, Mother's Best cornmeal and feed
and flour
and flour. And self-rising cornmeal, they had a 15-minute radio program. It ran from 7:15 to 7:30 in the morning, every morning, Monday through Friday. It was hosted by Hank Williams, and he and his boys would just come into the studio, record for 15 minutes. They'd do three songs. In between, they'd do these little commercials, Hank got paid $100 a week for a year doing this, and most of it was actually pre-recorded, even though there are times in the recordings where he says, keep sending in your requests because we like getting them.
Well, my favorite part of it was where, send in your receipts if you don't like Mother's Best cornmeal.
Yeah, yeah.
And Hank Williams personally will refund your money. Like from your local grocer.
After about the fourth time, because the first time through, I don't realize what's going on because let's face it, a lot of these songs. By the way, and let's mention that the musicianship on these recordings is badass.
Oh,
it's
amazing.
These are amazing.
This is the foundation
players.
Of country music.
They are so fucking good, and I had no idea that they were recorded live. He just. Sounds great. Those songs are killer.
They're just fucking around.
And it's amazing. The songs are amazing. But what truly makes this an amazing album is that, okay, so I'm listening. I can't remember what the first one on here. Was it just I Saw the Light? No. Cold, Cold Heart, right.
Yeah.
Which is a song I love, and I'm really enjoying it. And so, a lot of times, the first time through when I listen to these albums, I'll be trying to find out as much stuff as I can online about not only the performer but also the record. Couldn't find dick about this one, but then after I've heard Cold Cold Heart many times. After it ends, and then they're talking, and I realize it's live, and then I realize a minute and a half into this that they're still fucking talking about hush puppies and shit. I'm like, what the fuck is this?
There was apparently no such thing as a sellout back then. That's all this is. It's like a giant commercial for cornflour.
But if you think about that, that's kind of how TV and radio was at that time. I mean, you'd have one sponsor and you plugged the sponsor the whole time. It changed later when you got multiple commercials and stuff like that. But at the time, if you did any of these things.
It's just so funny to think about. Everybody loves – he's one of those guys that you can add to the list.
Hank Williams. Willie Nelson?
That Willie Nelson or Stevie Wonder that nobody thinks sucks. But you think about all these artists with fierce integrity who would never endorse a product.
That's oh, not he had what's... no problem with that.
No, well, none.
He's
no.
He leaned right into it.
But that's it. But you got to think of that also in the context of the time. I mean, it really was different. You're right.
Yeah.
I mean, like, at, you know, well, it changed radically.
I don't give a shit if an artist endorses a product.
I don't either. Yeah. I don't either. But I'm saying, like, there's a difference between, like, you know, when you used to have, like, the whatever, the Colgate Palmolive Hour, you know, and then whoever's on it would just hawk products for Colgate Palmolive on the show. During the show, the whole fucking time.
In the middle of their art.
In the middle of, right, yeah.
Well, and to be, you know, like, to sort of complete the circle, I mean, have you ever tried to make something that needed cornmeal without cornmeal? What are you going to do then?
Well, nothing. You know, ladies, which comes up a lot. If you want to make hush puppies.
Ladies, if you just get back in the kitchen.
Yeah, yeah, about like one
it's
in every three
super
things.
Mid-century sexist. Yeah. And it's just, I mean, like, not intentionally, but.
Yeah, you're just like, I don't know, maybe. Like,
it started to get to the point, like, I'm just sort of, like, I started raising an eyebrow when I realized what was going on. But then after about four songs, but I was so amused by it, but it also broke up my enjoyment of the songs. So
I had a broad smile on every time one of those commercials came on. I'm just like, this is so awesome.
He's like, I don't know. He said something along the lines of, like, I don't know much about making no biscuits, but I sure know how to eat them. You're going to get the lightest, fluffiest biscuits with mother's best flour.
Don't forget, it's washed twice, once in water, once in air.
Oh my God!
And just talking about, like, how much admiration they're going to get from, like, when they have people over. Like,
you know what we should do? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
go for it.
We should listen to a song later in this podcast. We should play the little clip of the Mother's Best,
totally,
just a little bit, so everybody could get an idea of what the fuck we're talking about.
And just so everybody understands, this running time on this album is 43 minutes. 16 minutes of that. Are commercials for Brothers Best.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was saying.
Some of the best music on it are commercials. Like, they do, like, a big fiddling fucking jamboree thing that it turns out is just a big Mother's Best commercial. Anyway, let's get into the namesake. I Saw the Light.
I wondered so aimless, life filled with sin. I wouldn't let my dear Savior in. Then Jesus came like a stranger in the night. Praise the Lord, I saw the light. I saw the light, I saw the light. No more darkness, no more night. Now I'm so happy, no sorrow inside. A blind man, I wandered alone. Worries and fears I claim for my own. Then, like the blind man, that God gave back his sight. Praise the Lord, I saw the light. I saw the light.
Gospel. I mean,
in hillbilly music too. There's that, you know, that, like, they come down off the holler and.
Well, I'm not, you know, I don't know that any of us in this room are all that religious, but, like, there's some, like, facets of, like, evangelical Christianity that are just fascinating, and this is one of them.
Well, this kind of gospel is interesting because, like, when I hear gospel, like, it's this sort of, like, hillbilly bluegrass mixed with, like,
well, it's like little pockets of, like, Appalachia or
yeah, Appalachia
wherever.
Is a great way to put it. Like my, like, you know, I said, like, my grandpa would call it holler music, you know, like,
yeah, no, dig
Jed
it.
Jed Clampett, his family, they enjoyed holler music. One would imagine,
well, as well as bubbling crude.
They enjoyed that as well. Got them into some wacky hijinks.
There were hijinks ensuing, Kevin.
Yeah, well, you know, and the interesting thing to me about this song is that it wasn't a hit when it came out. I mean, now we think of it in terms of, like, clearly it's enough of a standard that he put out. There have been three records that came out same artist.
There were three. One was a three.
Well, dude got rejected from the Grand Ole Opry. Like, he was, or, you know, like a I guess, auditioned for the Grand Ole Opry, and they were like, nah.
No, actually, he was accepted into the Grand Ole Opry.
Eventually he was.
Initially rejected.
But he was initially rejected.
Well, yeah, and wasn't he on? He was on a label, and then he got, like, rejected.
Well, apparently, like, many bad things happened to him because of his alcoholism.
Yeah, we did at some point talk about that because, like, if you read a little bit about him online, and everybody knows, I mean, Hank Williams, that's what he's known for. I mean, you know, his alcoholism. But, I mean, he just had a parade after parade. And a little – okay, that's what I meant. Of course, I just took that. It's implicit in, when I think of course, right?
Sure.
All right, my bad. But I'm saying other than that – you know, it's synonymous with being a bad alcoholic. But I didn't realize, like, he just couldn't keep a fucking band together because he was so bad.
No, everybody
was
just pissed at him all the time.
And there was one thing where
what was the Roy Acuff? Like, was like, you got $1 million talent, but a 10-cent brain?
10-cent brain, yeah. I was gonna point that out.
Abusing the gift.
He was dating, I guess, for a period of time, this woman who I don't know if she was dating him at the time and she was cheating on him with Hank Williams, but Farron Young, who's another amazing country singer, who also never got famous because of alcohol. Well, Hank Williams got famous, but Farron Young never really went over the top because of alcoholism. But and they were saying, like, on Wikipedia that Hank Williams, one of the reasons they fired him for the Grand Ole Opry is, like, he would just go to her house in Shreveport and just not show up. Like, who the fuck does that? I mean, like, it's the Grand Ole Opry in 1950.
Well, and at the time, like, you know, like, we think of Hank Williams as sort of like the founder of country music, but it was around before, but he's the one who, like, really...
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people that, yeah, I mean, like, that we can... one of the things that I think, like, to his credit is that he bridges the mournful... for lack of a better term, but holler music, the Appalachian stuff that we were just talking about, and gospel, and with a really solid strum straight to his guitar, which is something that you previously saw, like, more in Western music.
There's a really great documentary on Hank Williams' life story that's put out by BBC4. And I haven't seen all of it, but I've seen about half of it. And one of the things that they talk about in that was his kind of rough upbringing. Like, apparently from a very early age he was always in, like, just drawn to the music, and drawn specifically to, like, you know, I mean, he grew up in a, like, sort of a Southern Baptist, you
know, well, I think his mom like ran boarding houses all over the place.
Well, and she apparently was hard ass.
Yeah, his dad had, like, bad nerve damage in his face, or caused facial paralysis, and he was, like, in a sanatorium for, like, 8 years because of that.
And his mother, anyway, one of the things that they say in this documentary is that his mother, after time, used to just tell people that his dad was dead. And he was in that sanatorium for 10 years, his dad was. And I think he did eventually, like, pass. I mean, clearly.
Well, he got out. I read about, like, but his mom wouldn't let him retain or regain his role of the head of household, and he eventually just left.
Yeah, so there's that, and that he's also sort of drawn to this, you know, the specter of, like, just drawn to the music from the very beginning. But one of the things that one of his bandmates said in this documentary that I thought was particularly interesting was that, like, you know, he's known for all of these, like, sort of sad, mournful songs, but what this guy said, and, like, I could totally see this too. He's like, when you listen to them, though, it's not a sad, mournful experience. It's like he just beats, he wrings everything out of this, like, of the mournfulness out of the song, to where the part that holds it together is so thin that you can still experience it. I mean, it's like, it's why the blues aren't necessarily sad. And, like, that's a
good way to put it.
And his son, Bosifus.
Good old Bosifus.
Good old Bosifus.
Oh, we'll have a talk about him in a minute. I have something I want to bring up.
Said in the same documentary, his quote, what is country music except white man's blues? And I was like, I guess maybe there was a time when
it used to be that way. Certainly is not now, when it's like,
no.
Let's go get a tequila and go down to Mexico.
Go mudding.
Yeah.
Anyway, but fascinating, like, from the very...
You know what some of this sounded like to me? And, like, I don't know if either you guys heard this or Mark either. Some of it sounds Hawaiian.
Well, okay. That's because of the pedal steel. I mean, the pedal steel, like, they brought that over from Hawaiian music, from the lap steel.
I didn't know where, like, the, it was, like, it was just, like, in my head, like, you know, am I just not hearing this right? But, no, it sounds Hawaiian.
No, you are right. I mean, the country, like, sound of the pedal steel and the lap steel hadn't really evolved that far away from the Hawaiian sound yet at this point. Into what it would be like in the 60s. Like, now it sounds like country music and Hawaiian music sound nothing alike. But at the time, like, that style of music was just, those two styles were just getting married together. But yes, that was a...
Yeah, so...
I could see that.
Anyway,
boys, I think it's about time for us to take a short break to have a word from our sponsor.
That's the Married Man Blues. That's a better name for that, ain't it?
Ain't a, Look, huh? Ain't a married man in the world, ain't a dog sometime.
Yeah, you know what I mean, huh? You know, folks, I might not be an expert cook, but I can tell you right now, I'm an expert eater. And I found out that even without experience, you can make the most delicious... Let me say that again. The most delicious biscuits you ever tasted when you use Mother's Best flour. Biscuits so rich with flavor, so white and fluffy that your family will say, man, them's the best biscuits I ever eat.
And neighbors, for all your baking, you'll find that Mother's Best assures perfect results. Tested recipes for your baking favorites are enclosed in every sack of Mother's Best flour. Easy recipes with results guaranteed or your money refunded.
They ain't a married man alive who ain't a dog sometimes.
I'm telling you.
If you know what I'm
best
saying.
Best thing you could eat.
I'm telling you. That was always my friend Sarah's favorite Texas expression. I mean. Because it's like, it's a sentence, but it's really not. Like,
I love how he realizes that he's slurring his words. And he's like, let me start over again.
Let me take that. And meanwhile,
The most delicious.
And Mark was saying they record these at, they're recording these early in the morning, right? Or they're just running in the morning.
Well, they ran them from 7:15 to 7:30. They didn't actually say what times they were recording them.
Yeah.
I would be willing to bet they would probably record several shows at a time.
Well, why don't we get into one more song before we go to the intermission?
Okay, let's do it.
Which you have to, because it's on here. I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry.
Hear that lonesome whippoorwill. He sounds too blue to fly. Train is whining low. I'm so lonesome I could cry. I've never seen a night so long, and time goes crawling by. Behind a cloud to hide its face and cry.
It was lap steel. That's why it sounds Hawaiian.
That's a perfect example of where it sounds Hawaiian.
Well, I was saying pedal. There might be pedal steel earlier, but I'm like pretty sure that's what.
What's
it
the
was.
Difference between lap steel and just steel guitar?
Well, so steel guitar, like
your lap ride.
Lap steel is like an electric version of a dobro, where like the strings are set up higher and you play a slide. But a pedal steel, you have a lot of different things. They'll have one neck or two necks, and you can with your knees you can slide the tone up and down a lot, and there's also pedals to change the
so
tone.
What was he using on that, or what
just
was...
a lap steel, like, okay. So basically it's like a dobro, which is like an old acoustic slide instrument where the strings are up higher so it didn't rattle against the frets when you played.
And you guys won't electrified. Get this at home, but Shane is acting out where the actual instrument
is. Yeah, I know. I'm just,
he's just doing shaking it. His hands back
just,
and forth.
I'm just trying, because I have it. I'm just in my mind, like,
yeah, no, it's
give
like,
you a,
and I think it'll primer. I think it'll probably still translate great, but yeah, it is fascinating. And you know, we talk a lot about how collaborative music is by its very nature, and so to see, like, yeah, to pair up Hawaiian music, traditional Hawaiian music with old school country seems crazy until you see connective tissue like this.
And there's just a quality to his voice that is just heartbreaking.
It's mournful.
Yeah, exactly.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful music.
You know, but his voice will break at like the right time.
Vulnerability.
Yeah, it just sounds absolutely heartbreaking.
All right, man. Well, I think we're about to go into the intermission. Well, let's go ahead and go do that. So I fought myself whether or not I was going to play this video. I've already played it for Ryan.
I'm intrigued. Like,
No. I had you watch it late one night when we had both been drinking.
What?
It's by a group. It was the Canadian Village People, basically. And the name of the group is the Scat
Say
Brothers.
No more.
Scat, S-K-A-T-T. And
pitch.
And it was by, it was toward the tail end of, in fact, they were one of the acts that broke Casablanca's records, and Casablanca's records was one of the big
Kiss
was the big non disco. I mean, Kiss made them, but also Donna Summer, a bunch of that stuff. And so,
and later on, the Strokes, like sort of
Julian Casablanca's. Okay, but yes.
What are we watching?
We're going to watch a video by the Scat Brothers. Not it's S-K-A-T-T. It's not what you,
so it's not about shit.
No.
Or
no,
jazz.
It's about
it's about Scatman Carruthers.
It's about basically what from what I can ascertain, cowboy gangbang? I don't really know.
Oh, okay.
I'm not entirely
that'll think.
I'm not entirely
cowboy
sure.
Cowboy gangbang.
But I got really obsessed with this video, and I went all over the internet reading as much as I could about it. And none of the men actually dancing in this video were part of the band, but it is intended to be a pan to heterosexual sex in some way, but I'll let you guys watch it first, and we'll come back.
We'll
and by the way, the quality of the video is horrible because this song did nothing. So it's been resurrected by just a couple, like, truly chosen few online. Anyway, this is Life at the Outpost by the Scat Brothers.
I gotta ask, Shane, where are you sourcing your?
Well, dude, like, what was the other video that we watched that was just all men's butts?
Well, no, I got that off of AV Club. That one I got off of Cracked. It was like five songs that will immediately confuse and ruin a party.
Well, for sure. Like, I don't know who. That band's demographic is?
That's what the guy says. Like, who is his demographic? Nobody. But one of the things that he is saying, like, about this video, and he's right about this, he's like, your life is split into before Life at the Outpost and after Life at the Outpost once you finally watch that video. It is truly one of the greatest videos ever made, in my opinion. Like,
it's very entertaining. I'll give it that.
Years ago.
What is a video that's very entertaining other than a great video?
Years ago, there was a and I'll never look this up in time, so I'm not even gonna try, but years ago there was a Rhino Records put out an album that was solely designed like
to clear a party.
To clear a party, like it's getting late. Like we got to get people out of here. Oh, hang on, I've got just the thing. Like,
oh wait.
So I mean, you know, this could be. This could maybe be. Although this just seems like a video to clear a party.
Well, another one of the another
even
one
more
of,
so
another one of the songs that they put on there, which I highly want to play for you, but there's no video accompanying to it. It's called Hulkster in Heaven, and it's a song that Hulk Hogan made for a dead child that their Make-A-Wish Foundation wish was for Hulk Hogan to record a song about him. And he's like,
God, if you weren't dead already.
Dude, there's a gospel chorus. He can't sing. He's talking about when he gets to heaven, he hopes he tags out with his little Hulkamaniac one more time.
Oh, my God.
It's amazing.
That sounds actually kind of amazing.
It is incredibly amazing. Yeah, so now you've seen.
So describe, Shane, what we just – like for those who aren't following along.
Okay, so Life at the Outpost – so I gave the biography of the Scat Brothers. And apparently Mark just pulled up one of their pictures, and a couple of those guys in that video, this guy for sure with the big mustache was in that video. And I think this guy looks like John C. Reilly in the 90s. And so anyway,
it's a little bit of a Rick Springfield thing.
There's a bunch of guys they're all half of them don't have shirts on.
A bunch of like sweaty pectoral muscles.
There's
like,
a lot of sweaty pectoral muscles, a lot of mustaches, and there's a lot of like tight
fishnet,
jeans and
like fishnet undershirts.
Yeah,
like,
there's some of that, and there's incredibly bad choreography. Like I don't know who choreographed. There was a lot of cocaine in the
Paul
70s.
Abdul.
It was not Paul Abdul. At one point, like they just there's like a a footrest at a bar, and they're all just like lined up, and they're putting one foot on it, then taking it off, then putting it back on, and taking it off in rhythm. But the camera comes at them from different angles.
It's a fascinating thing that you should see once.
I've seen it probably 10 times now, and it never gets any. It gets better and better every time I see it. So I don't like.
I think I've now seen it twice, and I'm good.
Yeah. I'm gonna tap out. Speaking of Hulk,
I'm telling you, if it's something that I feel like it's not quite as good as Pink Panties, but it's one of those things that I feel
it's
like
it's in that same league.
It's in that same league. I want to share with people because there's no way
you should never go your whole life without having seen this video.
This video once, right. So there you go. There's Life at the Outpost, which, by the way, having listened or seen this at least 10 times, it's completely stuck in my head because I will say one thing about it. It's pretty goddamn catchy. Like, let's do it one, maybe twice, and you'll get that.
You might catch something.
Give your love to a cowboy, man. He wants to love you as hard as he can. Okay, let's go back into the show.
Let's, please.
So when I was young, growing up, my uncle owned a restaurant / honky tonk in Pasadena, Texas. It was actually just this large dance hall. They had tables out, and he'd roast a few pigs every day, and they'd have peanuts, and they'd have music and stuff. But that's kind of where I first got into some of this old country, Hank Williams type of stuff. And, you know, I always thought, like, I've always equated Hank Williams with, like, old timers and
oh yeah, storytellers,
you know, like, and you know, listening to these songs, it reminds me of my uncle a lot. And then I've looked back at these pictures of Hank Williams and stuff, and I always thought, here's a guy in his 60s and stuff, but the guy never
29.
He never made it to 30.
Nope,
did
29.
Not make it, yeah, I used to think the same thing.
Died in the back of a car, if I'm not
he
mistaken.
Did die in the back of a car
on New Year's Day, 1953.
Yeah.
So less than 2 years after this album, the recordings were made.
Yeah, I guess he had an underlying heart condition that was exacerbated by
spina bifida.
Well,
easy for me to say.
He had spina bifida, but I think that's they were saying that that's why he maybe took a lot of the pain pills and stuff like that. I mean, it's a lot. My whole life, I've always heard like he died, but he drank himself to death, and there's a good chance that definitely was part of it. But I mean, he had a bad heart. Didn't it? But
and a lonesome heart.
Apparently so.
Yeah.
They're so lonesome he could die.
In the back of a car.
Whoa. Oh. Oh.
Thank you all for all of that. It did occur to me, like, while I was listening to this past week, why is it that brilliant people die young? Like, it sucks.
It doesn't always happen.
It doesn't always happen. I mean, Johnny Cash lived a long life.
Willie Nelson lived a long life.
And
Richard Rodgers lived a long life.
Let's be real in that some of that is the storytelling that happens on the back end. So somebody has a like shooting star life, dies
sure,
young, and then you.
But it also seems like it happens more often.
There are plenty of people who die young who never do anything. That's my point.
That is a great point. No, but I think you're right. That's analogous to sort of like our friend Corey, who's like, I don't believe in coincidences.
Well, that's just retarded.
Yeah, life is just a series of coincidences. But I mean, there's something to what Kevin's saying. We notice the ones that die young because of we're listening to a brilliant genius that died young.
But it just seems to me that
there's a higher proportion. Percentage-wise, of people who die young who are also brilliant artistically.
I think that's you coloring in, and not just you, but I think that's the artist loving public coloring in the lines.
I could
of
be wrong.
Potential.
I agree. Like, I don't think I am.
I agree with Kevin. Okay, well, I mean, let's go through the geniuses of the latter part of the 20th century of
music.
Well,
if you do like the 27-year-old club, like you've got Jimi Hendrix and.
Let's bust out a Ouija board. Yeah, Kurt Cobain and Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison. I mean, yeah, fair enough. That is an interesting coincidence, but I think that the reality of that is there's a lot of mythology that, I mean, we're talking about 6, 7, 8 people that died really, really in their, you know, of the last 50, 60 years of the brilliant musicians that died that we listen to a lot of. I mean, Stevie Wonder didn't die young. I mean, there are hundreds more that didn't die really young.
Here's really my issue. My issue is really that I think we're just asking the wrong question. I think the right question is, had Hank Williams lived, what would be the kind of thing that you would hope that he would do? Or
what would have been his legacy?
I think it sounds like, unless he just did something that was way off script and like muddled his legacy over time, which I don't think. See, it seems like that guy had a very true. Like, he had a very true arc. Like, he was just going to be who he was, whether he lived to be 29 or 59.
Well, you know that he had this other, not to interrupt you, but he had this other, this whole other persona where he would do gospel music. Like, he would cheat.
Well, and that's on this record, too. Like,
there was a whole other thing that he did, like, this whole other character that he did. I think it was like Jake the Drifter or some shit, and he would quit drinking, he would commit himself to, because he had this conflicted... like religious, what he was doing with the drugs and alcohol and the sleeping around and stuff like that, and then that was conflicted with this very, very religious upbringing, and he would like periodically swing all the way to one side of the pendulum and then all the way to the other side periodically. So I mean, who knows, like in 5 years maybe he just would have ended up being like, you know, Jimmy Swaggart or something like that.
I don't know. At the very least, I guess maybe this is the long twisted road I'm on here. Like, I think the cool thing would have been, I think he definitely would have kept collaborating with people. Who knows? Maybe he'd have run all the band off, band after band after band, and finally had to do some other things just solo. If he had been around when, to Shane's point earlier in the podcast, like when the LP really came into being a thing, I wonder if that would have changed the way that he wrote. My guess is probably not that much, but, anyway, I think we can all agree that, like...
The industry certainly changed, like, not too long after...
Hard to say, but I'm pretty sure he would have collaborated with, like, DJ Herc and just invented rap music.
I think that is the most amazing idea. Somebody out there needs to write some fan fiction somewhere wherein a, like, 60-year-old Hank Williams... Like, it gets, like, waylaid in New York and gets together with African Bambaataa and, you know.
Yeah, man.
And like, is instrumental in the creation of rap. That would...
It's a crime that didn't happen.
I'm amazed that no one's ever even thought of that before. I think, like, to your point, what you were saying earlier about the good dying young or whatever, I think that the question to ask more so than why did these geniuses die young is why do you see a higher percentage of brilliant musicians, actors, writers become drug addict alcoholics? You know, but that is a more pertinent question, I think. I think
it's probably hard to process that kind of thing.
Well, and if just from what we know of his upbringing, it sounds like, you know, like he didn't, in some ways he had a lot of, he had a firm hand from his mom, but at the same time, like, not always a lot of supervision. And then when she was in his life, she was kind of heavily orchestrating. And I think my understanding is she was his manager for most of his career.
So there was this whole thing where in between his two wives, Hank Williams dallied briefly with a woman who had his daughter, Jet.
Yep.
Yeah. Who was adopted and then found out years later
in the 80s.
In the 80s. She was 21.
Yeah.
And she found out who, and it and turns out that his before he died, he had been granted a contract or something from the mother granting him custody. Like, she was a dancer. She didn't want the kid. She wanted to keep going out and being a dancer. She wanted to have the kid. He could have the kid. And so she had to do all of the, and this is pre-internet. She was his by blood. All of this paperwork existed in 1987. Alabama, the state court agreed that she was heir to part of the half of his fortune, or that she was an heir. And then in 89, the Supreme Court of Alabama said, "You are heir to half of his output of it, you know, the rest of his royalties and shit." And fucking Hank Williams Jr., even having all of the documentation showing that she was, in fact, his child, fought it to the fucking United States Supreme Court. That dude is a dick.
Oh, yeah.
That guy was worth millions and millions of dollars. This woman had nothing, and this fucking guy, which, by the way, he lost.
Yeah.
Oh, and they still hate each other.
Yeah.
To this day. They do, like...
Well, I think he is, like...
an asshole?
Unquestionably a complete prick. However... There are probably a half dozen Hank Williams Jr. songs that I like. Like, I just genuinely do.
Look,
like,
I'm a huge Morrissey fan, and Morrissey is undeniably a weird asshole.
Can we talk about, like, I mean, one of the things I didn't expect to be surprised by this record at all, or this collection of songs, or whatever it is. Beyond the cornmeal ads.
And flour.
Yeah, my bad. I think one of the things that did surprise me was that I have never thought of Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain as anything other than a Willie Nelson song. And I was like, oh, of course. It's like a history lesson.
I thought that Willie Nelson wrote that song until very, very recently, because it is...
I don't think I've heard the Willie Nelson version.
Oh, my God.
A Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain?
I don't think I have. I'm willing to admit it. It's fine. Okay.
That's crazy to me. It's one of his signature songs.
I'm sure that you have, even inadvertently. But he does. Willie Nelson does a really signature, amazing version of this track. And to find this on this record, I was like, oh.
I thought the same thing. And I had just recently found out that it wasn't. Even I forget the name of the guy that wrote it, but he even said, like, yeah, once Willie did that, like, it was on
Reddit. That's the definitive version.
It's the definitive version. It's sort of like Willie Nelson said the same very, very, very similar about Patsy Cline and Crazy. Yeah, yeah. He's like, all right, I give
done.
Up.
Oh, yeah.
He wouldn't play that song for 30 fucking years. Like,
yeah. Well, I was going to want to dial up Moving On Over, but I think we have to hear Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain.
I mean, of Hank's canon, I think Moving On Over is the better song of the two that Hank did, but Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain I love too. So I don't know.
It's interesting to hear the version of Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain.
Okay. Well, let's do Moving On Over, and if we have time, we'll get on to Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain.
Okay.
Move over, short dog, let the tall dog in. She won't let me sleep in the house, huh? Home last night about a 10:30, and that baby of mine, she wouldn't let me in. So move it on over,
move it on over,
move it on over,
move it on over,
move over, short dog, cause a tall dog's moving in. Well, she told me not to play around, but I done let the deal go down, so told it on over,
told it on over. move it on over.
Drag it on over,
move it on over.
Move over, nice dog, cause a mean dog's moving him. Hey, boy.
One thing I wanted to mention while we were talking about the ballad of the rivalry between the Williams siblings is that these Mother's Best recordings are that they actually went to court with PolyGram. PolyGram thought
or
that
who
they
owned the, who like owned acetates them. Or whatever.
Yeah, and so the Williams siblings owned them, and if you look on the bottom here. On Spotify or whatever, it says licensed by the estate of Hank Williams. That's why you can't find anything about this album or any of the shit online, because
it's... Oh, this is a very litigious estate.
No, there's no press. But I'm just saying there's no press because it's not owned by a label anymore. Like courts granted in the rights to all of these live Mother's Best. And so anyway, yeah, so this album was put out by Jet and Hank Williams Jr. to some... degree. I don't know how it happened.
Like how many fucking iterations of greatest hits? I mean, like how many songs did this dude record? Like something like just like 50 or something.
Not that many. Yeah, I know. Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's I'm sure that those albums they both sell at their live shows, and that's why there's no press for them. I mean, they don't have a press machine. But they're both, you know, they both play music for a living and stuff. But yeah, you're right. I mean, but if you go back and look at like Sinatra, especially when he got older. Like, I mean, he's got a catalog, but you'll just see these same songs show up time. And Tony Bennett does the same damn thing, man. Time and time again, it's like these...
It's their version of Robert Earl Keane's The Road Goes On Forever. I was like, oh, it actually does, because it's on everything that you've ever...
Just on an endless loop.
Yes, exactly.
Well, that was a highly, highly entertaining album. And Kevin? Yeah. Or do you have something you want to say?
No. I was just gonna say it was everything I hoped it would be. Other than that,
it was better than I thought it was gonna be. Again, a lot of that owing to Mother's Best,
Cornmeal and Flour.
For me, this was better than a dozen cornbread muffins.
If you want some cornbread muffins, just pick yourself up some Mother's Best.
You know, there's recipes in every bag of Mother's Best. We'll just have it shipped straight to your house.
You got to know that, like, if they're, because that's not like, that's not a, at least a brand that I know anymore.
No.
Like, it's like,
no.
So it's like, you got to know that at some point in the past, somebody went, like, well, what do we got to do? Like, we had Hank Williams. I mean, for crying out loud.
Okay. Kevin, what do you got for us this week?
Okay. So there's a track that I came across a few weeks ago that I really like a lot. By a Milwaukee musician named Trapper Shep, and it's a song called Ogallala, which we'll spin now. But ultimately, it sort of didn't sound like anything else that I've heard of late, and yet there were some hallmarks that I also found pretty familiar, which we'll talk to on the other side.
I love to have that gal around. Her biscuits are so nice and brown. Her pies and cakes beat all the rest, cause she bakes them all with Mother's Best. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I like that tag there, huh?
In the headlights, a semi-jackknife that felt all right. When they shut down, I-80 pulled over to the shoulder. Took a winter look in a snowed-in mood. I saw a movie, an unexpected journey. I felt like Martin Freeman when he was first leaving. Now I'm waiting for the road to thaw. I'm waiting for the road to thaw in a town called best rate.
Trapper Shep, who up to this point has mostly played with a band.
It's a dude, not a band?
It's a dude. He's played with a backing band called The Shades for a long time. He's a musician out of... I'd say for a long time. He's a pretty... he's in his early 20s, a musician from Milwaukee. But anyway, that that track ended up on an NPR mix. And actually, it was a different mix of that same track. One of the things that struck me by it was that it was that there's a version of it that's been mixed by Brendan Benson.
That's what we just listened to.
That is what we just
who
listened to.
Who is Brendan Benson?
Brendan Benson is
he
a
was
musician.
In Jellyfish, right?
He was, well, he was in the Raconteurs with Jack White.
Yeah.
Put out a really amazing record called LaPalco that.
But just super poppy guy. So that Tahiti 80 meets Bon Iver meets Shane Bartel. And I know that one of those people is like in the room.
It sounds like there's a lot of Sufjan Stevens in that to me.
I could hear that too. The mix.
That song won me over. I really did not like it for about the first half of the song. It sounded way too Jason Mraz-y for me.
Okay.
Like just too clean and too. But then like as the instrumentation got a little like more interesting,
Some harp and some glockenspiel.
Yeah. They got really interesting instrumentation that was playing off the melody, and then that earworm of hearing that chorus a couple times, like it started to stick.
Well, and it's like after you've heard it a few times, like lyrically, I think it's just a really sort of not every song is a perfect circle, and not every song is intended to be, but I think that song is kind of written in a way where everything matches up a little bit.
I started to pick up on the lyrics a little bit more, too, toward the end of it. Yeah, I really did not like that song for about the first 45 seconds, and then like a switch flipped, and I liked it more. I think partially it was how, again, there was no reverb or any no effects on his vocals, and they were really up front. That's what made me think of like Jason Mraz. He kind of sounds like Jason Mraz too.
Well, and I guess maybe what I would say
like
is,
vocally,
maybe so. I guess what I would say is that oddly, like so the NPR version of that track, which I downloaded, was also attributed as Brendan Benson's mix. I certainly can feel like if you listen to any of his solo stuff, or even like kind of recognize what his contribution is to a collaboration like that of the Raconteurs, like it feels like it's got his fingerprints on it a little bit. Anyway, at the very least, I thought like this is something that's it's definitely accessible, but it certainly feels like it maybe is just a little bit different than what I've presented other times. So. Wanted to have some fun and give some love.
That's a good song to have on when you're cutting some onions and making dinner, like with drinking a little glass of wine. And
that is a very specific.
well, I guess so. I'm just okay. Well, while you're
making dinner,
while you're peeling
7:35 and.
So while
on
a Thursday.
While you're making food at a dinner party before anybody gets there, like that's the kind of music I listen to.
Okay, right on. Well,
next week.
So next week, I've been thought about this and
Scat Brother, Scat Brother, Scat Brother, Scat Brother.
Yeah. Damn it, no. Anyway.
I so want to listen to a whole album of
good
that.
God.
Oh, you do? Because
no. Because no.
Mine's in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I was being ironical.
Anyway. So I thought about this and what I really wanted, like one of the things that I think we've been doing a lot on this show lately, which I think has actually been really terrific, is. There have been a lot of really great stories around the records that we've picked, and I would like to
continue the tradition.
Continue that in that vein. And so we're going to talk about a band called The Wrens. And
that is a good story.
Yeah,
W R E
like the birds.
Yeah. And we'll do their record. Like each one of their records is kind of an interesting story, and I don't know them all particularly well, but we're going to talk about the Meadowlands and what the interesting circumstances are around that band and the fact that they don't put records out very often. They're super painstaking about them, and they may have another record coming out this year.
I bought the Meadowlands on tour one time, and it got completely scratched up before I even ever had a chance to listen to it.
Oh, that's a shame.
I just completely forgot to ever get it again. So, yeah, like that was like years and years and years
ago.
That
record came out in 2003.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Good times. Great taste. I'm Shane.
Ryan.
Kevin.
And for Mother's Best Cornmeal, I'm Mark.
This is Somebody Likes It.
Let me say that again. The most delicious cornmeal.